What is going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I'm your host, Curry Blanford, and today I'm talking to Tara Brimmer. So Tara is the founder of a business called House Peace, and House Peace is kind of exactly what it sounds like, therapy for your home. And so what Tara and her team will come in and do is just like make your house more usable and efficient and go through things and, you know, just kind of put stuff where you can see it in its original place or where it should go and that sort of thing. And so we talk about why she got into this role, why this business started, the importance of it. We talk about, you know, her background in sort of counseling and how that plays out in her business today, and then how all that, you know, her story has sort of led up to this point. It's a great interview. It's fascinating. Tara is super fun. You're gonna love this interview. She's just very easy to talk to and listen to, and you're gonna want to get your house made over by Tara and her team for sure, no doubt. So I can't wait for you to hear about it. Can't wait for you to listen to this really fun episode with some like great info in it. So before we get to the interview, though, I just want to remind you to make sure you're following me on Instagram and Facebook at Theology of Hustle and on Twitter at Curry Blanford. That way you can stay up to date with all the things we got going on. Also, a quick reminder to leave a rating and review. You can go to the bottom of your iTunes app, leave that rating and review there. It just helps get the word out about the podcast. And it's exciting when people review me. So it's always fun to know people are listening and enjoying the podcast. So do all those things for me. And I hope you enjoy hearing from Tara. All right, Tara, well, thanks so much for making time for me and jumping on the podcast. This is super fun.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. I don't know why I'm here because I feel like you've got so much more to offer. So let's just, I'm going to start by asking you, you're Enneagram type. No, just kidding.
Just take over. Just take over. It's totally fine. Okay, let's just jump off here and maybe have you sort of introduce yourself to everyone a little bit.
Sure. So my name's Tara Brimmer. I live in Birmingham, Alabama. I've been married for 1 million years. hold on. 1997 is the year I got married. So whatever that is. It'll be 23 years. And I have three children. My oldest is 14, headed to high school. My middle is 10, going to fifth grade. And my daughter is 8 and headed to third grade. Okay. So we've lived here in Birmingham, I think 11 years. We really like it. We were kind of nomads, I guess, a little bit before this, but we're very rooted here at this point and have no plans to pull up again.
I love it.
So for work, I started my own organizing business back in 2013. And it was kind of a result of like now being a mom of three that year. And just needing kind of an outlet that where people would listen to me and maybe pay me and, you know, not ask me to do things that I don't want to do, which is what children do all day long. I love them so much. So anyway, you know, really organizing was such a stress relief for me in the last number of years. And I thought, you know what? This is such a need. Someone would pay me to do this. And so I started the business at that time. And prior to that, I really had not worked at the same time as being a mother. So 12 years, I'm pretty sure. No, that's not right. That's not right. It doesn't matter. Eight years. I was fully stay at home. That's what it was.
Okay.
It was the 12 year thing is how many years I had a preschooler at home. So, anyway,
yeah, that's a lot.
That's a long time.
That is a long time.
Yeah. And, you know, anyway, so I started the business and it just grew very, very slowly at whatever pace I could do while my kids were at school or Mother's Day out. Do y'all have Mother's Day out in Chicago? Is that?
Yeah. Thing? Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I built the whole business around that time frame. Like we only got 4 hours. So my jobs, I'm like, they have to be 3 hours. I could take 30 minutes to get there, like drop my kid off, take 30 minutes to get to the job, do the job and leave and pick up my kids. So that was kind of a crazy time. But over the years, we've expanded. I have maybe 10 contract employees, or I guess you would call them independent contractors is what I'm supposed to say. Yeah. they're not my employees. And it's really a joy. I love helping people kind of comb through what their possessions are, what their systems are, their habits, their routines, and tweak those things. Sometimes it's huge tweaks, sometimes it's little things, but you know, we're just in the business of thoughtfully thinking through parenting or special needs or the layout of your house or the square footage of your house, whatever circumstances. Like, we're pretty custom, you know, like all the women that work for me, we're all sort of in helping industries actually anyway by training. I've got nurses and teachers and counselors and, you know, so, and everybody's just trying to do the same thing, you know, raise a family. And so what does that look like from a possession standpoint in the home? Yeah. So it's so fun. It honestly is. The actual in-house jobs are really, like, 90% of them are super fun. The stuff that's not as fun as the, you know, bookkeeping and tracking, you know, whatever on the computer. So, you know, I love doing it. The pandemic has been very strange. Just trying to figure out, like, well, what does this mean that I can't work, you know,
for
a season? I mean, we have started picking jobs back up when Alabama opened back up in May. But we only pick up jobs when there's a demand. So if people don't have a need, then we don't work. So processing all that has been, it's been hard, to be honest, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, all small businesses sort of, you know, are feeling that. I would imagine, though, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, it just feels like when you're spending a lot more time in your house, like, you might want a service more like yours, because it's like, now all the things that, like, didn't drive me crazy because I was out and about, like, drive me more crazy now. Have you found that to be true?
I think that has been my theory of what's going to happen this fall. But I think we're still so in it that I'm not sure. I mean, we just got an email for our school district. My kids go to public school yesterday announcing the start date. This is what school's going to look like. And so as of now, it's looking like the kids are going to go to school, and it's, you know, whatever. But who's to say it's not going to last 6 weeks and then we're doing this again? So we'll just see. I mean, I just, you know, to jump into the theology stuff, I have been just praying with my hands open. Do you know what I mean? Like, Lord, I don't know. And I am so much like, Tara Bremer equals house piece. Like, and people will say that to me. They'll see me in public, be like, oh, it's the house piece lady. You're the house piece lady. And it's like, yes, I am, but I'm also not. And so what does that mean? That I am not working as much as I want, or that the way I've advertised in the past isn't working anymore, or who am I? And so that's been hard and good. And I'm confident I still want to work. But, you know, actually, strangely enough, this week we've, like, super been busy. So we've had a lot of people wanting us to come in and do jobs. So I think it just depends.
Yeah. Do you find that your identity really easily gets wrapped up sort of in your work?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm an Enneagram 3, so I'm driven in that way to, like, make improvements or have a project or an accomplishment. And that's very much like when you go on an organizing job, say for 3 hours, you can do a thing in that time. You can take a room and completely make it over. Right. And so it feels very before and after. And that's feels great. And my wing too is very satisfied by helping people and looking at things very, you know, giving them an opportunity to look at things differently as well. You know, I love that. So it's almost impossible to extricate what I do from who I am, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. No, I definitely understand that. That's a really hard thing. I mean, have you found practices or something that sort of helps you in that? Or, I mean, is it just sort of, sort of getting by?
You mean as in terms of, like, just right now, this, like, unknown?
Yeah, well, I mean, just, like, keeping your identity from drifting into, like, being work only, you know?
Well, that's a tricky question with a tricky answer. Part of the answer is I don't know. The other answer is one thing that I am wrapped up in is social media. Mm-hmm. I have very heavily invested my advertising efforts in social media. Right. And it's not really a great time for that right now to advertise my business in that way. And so now I'm like, well, you know, what will work? What can I do that's not going to sound tone deaf on social media? What can I do? So, you know, there has been a season for me of just stepping back, taking kind of a Sabbath, and just, again, like praying my hands open every single day. I've also, like, one practice I have done that's kind of independent of this, this year, don't know what got into me, except the Lord, but I started reading the 1-year Bible and have missed very few days. Like the days that I've missed, it's been like a vacation day where I forgot and I would catch up the next day. So for whatever reason, God's given me this gift of being able to read every day. And I have never jumped into the Old Testament like this. Now, it's not a super deep dive because you're reading huge passages every day. But I listened to your Old Testament lady yesterday. Oh, yeah. She's awesome. I'm going to buy her book.
She's amazing. Yeah.
She's so smart. And so I think that just having that routine and really learning more about the people of the Old Testament and what it looks like to be a flawed human who loves the Lord, but might make terrible mistakes, might make little mistakes, might, you know, walk away or whatever. I just think learning more about that has been super helpful for my own identity, for sure.
Yeah, that's cool. No, I really appreciate that. I think that's helpful. And yeah, good stuff. Okay, so I was really intrigued when I saw what you do in your business, because I don't think there's I haven't come across a lot of that out there. You know what I mean? This sort of way of like helping people just kind of get their lives together or something, you know what I mean? But I think it's really helpful. I guess in my experience, people in general just don't think enough about their surroundings and how, like, where they live and what they do sort of affects their own, like, mental health and the way that they can relate to others.
Yeah, you know, and it's all I think about. So when I meet someone who doesn't think about that, I think both of us are like, weird. You're weird. I'm weird. We're all weird. I don't know why you're so obsessed with these, you know, with clearing off my counters. Leave my counters alone. Leave my notifications on my phone alone. Like I've got a couple of friends who I tease. I'm like, how dare you have all these notifications unattended to on your phone? Hand me the phone. I'm going to deal with it. And they're like, get away. It doesn't bother me. But definitely there's an often quoted stat, and I quote it all the time, about women and stress related to clutter. And it's shown that women's cortisol levels go up as the clutter goes up in the home. And it's not really the same for men. They don't have that same body response. And I do think that's true, even if someone can't articulate it or identify it. And I still have to work on articulating what it is I can offer for someone. Like, I was talking to a friend yesterday who we became friends because she hired me to come do a job for her sewing business. And because she was like, I can't figure out how to make myself more efficient and how to store my, you know, supplies and whatever. So we did the job. And long story short, it's a couple years later and we're good friends. And she was like, she said that sometimes she thinks that people just still don't know how helpful it is to have that outside perspective. And I just still have to get good at, like, articulating that, like, what words will say, you know, will communicate, like, I care about you. I do have some ideas that can help you if you are desperate, if you're stressed in the home, if your clutter is bothering you. I mean, even stupid stuff like, I don't know, staging a house for sale. That was a job we did earlier this week. We had a team go in and 2 days to help someone get a chaotic home ready to sell. Wow. And you know, we very rarely have male customers, but this was a man, and he was just like, y'all just do whatever. You just do your thing. And so we went from absolute chaos to, hey, we could probably take some real estate pictures now, in the course of, 3 hours, we just kind of stick with a 3-hour thing. And then we just bring in more people so that we can get more done in that 3 hours. So I don't want to presume that everybody's going to call us magicians, but sometimes a lot of people do. They're like, this is magic. And I try to like lower people's expectations as much as I can. Like a lot of what I do is expectation management, because I don't want someone to think we're going to do magic, but then that's just not a reasonable goal. Right. But at the same time, there are people who are like, this has changed my life. And that just means the world to me.
Yeah. Well, it like gets me really excited. I mean, we're both Enneagram 3. So like the efficiency of it all is just like magical. Like there's something to like just getting it all worked out to where it all sort of fits and works and makes sense, you know?
Right. Like it doesn't, you know, as much as I can, I try to get people's possessions. We're going to put like with like, and some people, they want to, I don't know that they want to, but they inadvertently spread things around the house that are of similar categories and they don't know what they have and they overbuy because they forgot that they had these things. And, you know, I think ultimately being pared down and organized saves a ton of money.
Yeah, totally.
Ton of time for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and a ton of mental energy, right? You're like, oh, where's that thing that, you know, I left somewhere, you know?
Yeah. And I think if you kind of, as a person, end up having like a way that you do things, again, like kind of open-handed because things have to change sometimes. But if you have a way that you do things, it just takes a million decisions out of it. And like,
right.
we're faced with so much input, so many decisions. I think the pandemic has like ratcheted that up another notch. Like, wait, is this place open? What's their policy? Like so many decisions that you have to make or, you know, whatever. And like, I want to calm the home down so that we can focus on the things that are important, whether that's work, whether that's adoption, whether that's relaxation, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think that's so valuable. And I love that you do that for people. Like, it's just, yeah, I want to do that.
Well, your background looks great, by the way. You've got your books and your guitars.
They're a little all over the place, but.
My advice for you would be try to get your books all in the same place.
Yeah, right.
If books are your thing, and they probably are because you're a pastor, maybe someday you could do a humongous bookshelf full of all your books and not have them stacked and scattered throughout the house. And then you're like, yeah, my thing is books. Like I'm kind of a minimalist, me personally, but at the same time, I have a lot of books and we're just going in with that. You know, my husband's a musician, so he's just going in with drums. Like that's just his deal. And so we have way more drums than the average person should have. but we have far fewer Pyrex dishes than most people.
I love it. I think that's important because those Pyrex, they get everywhere.
Oh my gosh. They're difficult to store.
Right. So you have some sort of background in sort of, I can't remember. I looked it up, but what's your background sort of like school and all of that stuff?
So my undergraduate degree is in psychology from Purdue University. So a little bit up in your neck of the woods.
Yeah. That's not far.
Not far at all. So my master's degree is in pastoral counseling. MAPC is my degree. And I got that from Moravian Theological Seminary in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. You ever heard of the Moravians?
I've heard of the Moravians, yes, but I don't know a ton. So.
I'm not a Moravian. It was a degree that was available close to me geographically. So I have a soft spot for the Moravians, but I am not one. They are the ones who made, you ever see a Bethlehem star? It's usually like a lantern or a lamp or maybe a Christmas ornament. That's a Moravian thing with like a million points on it. It's very pretty.
Okay.
Before I graduated, I worked on an adolescent psychiatric unit, like an inpatient unit. Some work with some troubled kids with in-school suspension. And then once I graduated, I started working as a counselor at a group practice in Bethlehem. Wrong city and state. In Del Mar, New York, which is near Albany. But it was not, it was going to be a slow going to get licensed because people had to pay out of pocket. So here I am, 24. And I'm like, can I give you some counsel on your marriage? Do you want to pay me $100 for that? So anyway, it was very slow going. And then I got pregnant and decided to retire from that part of my career.
Yeah. That's, I mean, you really have been all over the place.
Like, yes. That's a,
even in that little history.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even mention, like, I lived in Kentucky for a little bit. Paducah, Kentucky, home of Stephen Curtis Chapman. Random information.
That's awesome.
And I grew up in Louisiana. So,
wow.
Yeah, I'm all over.
Yeah, no kidding. That's crazy. So how do you see sort of like that experience from like your, you know, early 20s and all of that, like sort of playing out in what you do now? Because, I mean, you could see the correlation in some ways, but like, how do you see that like interacting with people and that sort of thing?
It's hugely related. You're right. Coming into somebody's house is extremely vulnerable for them. I mean, they've got me, they've probably got a couple assistants coming in. So you've got, you know, these three women dressed in black coming to like, you know, see what's inside your drawers. That's, you know, that's really vulnerable. So I see a huge part of my job to make a client feel comfortable. I mean, we tell them like, hey, your information is confidential. We don't tell your name. We don't post pictures without permission. We don't, tell people where you live or, you know, anything about you, because that's just one level of helping them not feel as nervous. I mean, lots of people are desperate enough to where they're just really happy that we're there, but there's a good percentage of people who are like really, really nervous. So we, you know, there's a lot of like, hey, I want you to feel safe here. But at the same time, so the psychology really comes in when you talk about habits and like, really digging in, like, why do you do this thing? Like, what's the reason? There might be a great reason and let's just go with that. Or it may just be a mindless habit. And let's see, let's talk about how we can do some habit training here. And by placing this thing here and this thing away and this thing thrown away, we're actually, that's going to build in the habit for you. So, you know, the psychology of it, and just some practicality and just, I want to say common sense, but I think that's kind of rude to say that, like, I've got all the common sense and you don't,
right.
Because that's not true. But also just saying, hey, you're making this more complicated than it has to be. Let's just do this a little bit easier, you know?
Yeah. Well, 'cause there's so many factors at play with somebody's house like that, right? There's a personality type. I mean, we know from the Enneagram, right? There's people that are like more prone to, you know, certain way, like just patterns of thinking, like, and you know, they have different perspectives, but there's also just like a family culture, you know, if like you didn't grow up in that sort of place, like retraining yourself after, you know, 30, 40, 50 years of living a certain way has got to be like just super hard.
It is. And I think there's people who are willing and want that, but there's other people who don't, and those aren't really the people who hire us, you know. Yeah, the people right. There's an automatic filter there, right? Like, people who don't want to change aren't going to bring us in and pay us dollars to tell them to change,
right?
But we try to empower people, like, hey, let's set a reminder. We need a visual cue about this thing you're going to start doing. And don't try to do this for 25 things. We're going to do like 2 things. Let's post this on your refrigerator for 30 days. And after that, you can throw the note away because it's probably a habit by then or whatever.
But there's so much problem solving that has to go into that. Like, that's pretty cool. And it's got to be sort of taxing, right? To like, I mean, because you're trying to like, I don't know, get to the bottom of some of these behaviors in some ways.
It is. It can be very taxing sometimes. The job I did this week to get that the house ready to sell, I was working in a room by myself and pretty much had carte blanche to do whatever I thought was appropriate. So that was not taxing to me at all. It was a joy. It was so easy. Yeah. And I was energized. Then there's other jobs where, you know, we're working hand in hand with the client and very closely with them and asking a million questions. And that can be hard on them. And it can be just tiring for me. Not that I don't want to do it, but there are some days I'll go home and I'm like, I'm going to take a little nap because this was a lot of talking and a lot of decision making. So for sure. Sometimes I'm surprised by this, but some people get a fire lit under them from having us there, and other people are really exhausted and just need to take a minute for sure. But yeah, lots of problem solving.
Well, I mean, I would imagine some of that clutter in people's homes, and I'm sure this is true for me as well, that clutter represents sort of, you know, emotions, and, you know, there's attachments to things and, you know, histories that like getting rid of stuff isn't that easy, right?
It's really not. And I think that's why so many people who are at a point of desperation we kind of have to leverage that energy because it really is an identity thing in so many ways. You know, for whatever reason, coffee cups have become an identity thing. And someone might have 30 coffee cups for one coffee drinker in the house.
Right,
and it's like, listen, you don't have the space for this. You really don't, because look what has happened or whatever in the kitchen. And they're like, well, these are sentimental. And it's like, why did the coffee cup become the souvenir of choice or the identity maker of choice when maybe we need to like mix that up a little bit instead of like an alma mater coffee cup. Let's do a sweatshirt. Like, let's just diversify a little bit so that you're not filling up your cabinets or whatever. But at the same time, one thing that we try to tell people is like, you know, you still have your memories, you have pictures, you have relationships, you have the really important things about this memory. Not to say we throw away memories, like, but again, we have to be super practical and say, like, is there space for this? Is there another thing in your life that represents the coffee cup, which we could let go? So for example, like sometimes this has happened a number of times, I don't know why, but like a young mom who maybe lost her mother at a young age, and she's got her mother's cookbooks, and she's got, you know, some dishes, and she's also got like some other things that I'm struggling to come up with a good example, but like, I don't know, we'll say some notes that have her handwriting on it or something. Sure. So yeah. You've got this like huge collection of things that belong to your mom who you miss and you wish was still with you and all these things. So, but the practical thing is you've outgrown, you know, your space or whatever. Can we identify the thing that best represents her? Maybe it is the handwriting. Maybe it is the cookbooks, but maybe it's not. Okay. The coffee mug or whatever. Because usually like if there's sentimental stuff like that, there's probably something really lovely and beautiful that you can display or use or whatever. And so these other things like a hairbrush, we can probably say about a hairbrush, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, Cause you're, I mean, not in a clinical setting, but you're almost doing therapy with people, I'm sure, as you sort of like do these things.
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's like one of my taglines is this is therapy for your house, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What, I mean, what have you seen like the after effects of like some of these people that you have like contact with? And I mean, what have you seen people sort of saying about, you know, after their life is sort of simplified and organized? And
I mean, a lot of people who we follow up with, we try to be so practical that it's just brainless to keep up with it. You have to maintain a system. Like there's no getting around it. So if someone wants to just say, hey, I'm organized, and it's just going to be that way forever, that's not really realistic. But people who are able to like do some minimum of maintenance, they love it. And what's really fun for me is like coming into someone's house or seeing a picture and seeing something that's very much house piece-esque that maybe we didn't do, but they did. Do you know what I mean? That's really gratifying. And I guess the best reward we get is that people recommend us to others. And so they're like, hey, this helped me. This might help you. So, and it looks different. And again, I guess that's where the education and the just diverse experience comes into play, because we might be helping a mom in her home, but we might be helping a video editor who, you know, has millions of hard drives or whatever. So it just, but the bottom line is for us, we want you to know what you have, and we want you to be able to see it and access it. Because if you know it, or if you see it, you're going to know what you have and you're going to be able to access it. Stuff that gets shoved away, stuff that gets piled, you're going to forget about it. And then it just starts becoming this dark cloud of like chaos that you don't even want to face, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. No, that's a little too close to home.
Maybe. We should have set up like a little mini session.
Yeah, we totally could have done that. We'll do that. We'll do that. We're in a simplifying phase right now. That's why I said earlier, it surprises me to have more people, you know, asking about services right now. Like, so for instance, I've had two screen doors in my house that like the closer broke off of them. Or, you know what I mean? How the like, you know, the storm door or whatever, like, so they would just like sort of fly open and stay open. And of course my kids cannot shut a door to save their lives.
No,
anyway,
they cannot.
You know, But for like years, I've had these doors that just like fly open. And so when we were in the pandemic and I had nothing else going on, like I just started fixing stuff around the house. And I'm like, what? Like, why have I not done this? Like, took me 5 minutes, you know?
Oh, I know. It's definitely an attention thing. Have you read any of Cal Newport's work?
No.
You might enjoy it. he talks a lot about being able to work deeply and focus. His big thing is called Deep Work. And another one of his books is called Digital Minimalism. And just, I'm oversimplifying, but his thing is attention and focus. And I think that, you know, we've been focused on other things, and the pandemic did allow us to like shift our attention, and all of a sudden our eyes are opened up to certain things. But by the way, see, even little hacks like this are something that we like to bring to the table. So my kids won't close the door either. Okay. And there's two particular doors that I don't like to be open. One is the pantry, because my house is a very open concept. It's just a giant cavern of a rectangle. Okay. Right. And by the way, I would not do that again if I were to ever buy a different house.
Just from an organizational perspective, or from a like...
Well, first of all, I don't have enough walls to put art on, so rude to my builder. Okay. That was rude. But secondly, just it's kitchen, dining, living room. And so someone's in the living room, they see mommy over in the kitchen and they're yelling 30 feet away, like, mom, or they might not be yelling. They might be mumbling and thinking that I'm paying attention to them. And there's, you know, lots of noise. It's just noisy and chaotic. So okay. All that to say, okay, the pantry being open, then it's just open wreckage if it's not, you know, perfectly organized or something, just open in my whole entire house. So we put a self-closing hinge. Did you know you can get these things?
No.
So, and it takes 2 minutes. So if you have another door, not your exterior door, but if you have a door in your house that you want closed all the time, you just replace like a bottom hinge with these self-closing hinges that you can get at the hardware store. And then we did it in my master bathroom, because my master's on the front of the house. I like to have the shades open, but if the bathroom door's open, you see all the way through my bathroom and all the way into the closet, and it just looks like a wreck. But it's little things like that. Like, how can we find a pain point? The pain point is my family won't close the door. Is it worth me yelling at them all the time to close the door? It's really not. I'm just going to get a $15 hinge and take care of that little thing. So if I can take my attention to that for just a minute, then I'm never going to have to think about it again. It's very little. It probably doesn't amount to much, but when you start doing that across your whole house, you start having more attention currency to give to something else that matters more to you.
Yeah, that's really good. That's good. I because, you know, we talked a little bit beforehand. We're both adoptive parents. And when we teach a trauma-informed parenting class, a lot of trauma-informed parenting is stuff similar to that, in that like this becomes a issue every single day at this time. Let's do some investigation and figure out what the issue is, right? What's the behavior behind, or what's the need behind the behavior? You know,
I think I'm a great example of that. I was thinking about this in prepping for our interview. You know, I think of the word hustle, and I think of someone driven and pushing forward. And I always thought I was that person, but I think I'm a reactive hustler. I think that I just see opportunities and reach for them. I don't necessarily make the opportunities. So because I'm reactive, the flip side of that is I'll just get annoyed about what you're talking about, where they're like the same time of day, we always have a meltdown. I'm like, just stop. Everybody just stop. which is not helpful and doesn't address the chronicness of it. And so if I can try to, instead of be reactive, be proactive and say, oh, this always happens. And so I don't need to be upset. What I need to do is anticipate it. And if there's something I can do about it, great. And if not, we'll go from there or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cause it just again, like you keep saying, like, it lets you give attention to the places you need attention, right? So if you're like going around your house sort of putting out fires all the time, like, or trying to find stuff all the time or something, that mental energy could be being used to pour into your children or to a spouse or a friend, or, you know what I mean?
Something more important to you. I think that's a big deal for me, is like, what is important to you? Let's make it so that you can do that more.
Right. Yeah. I think that's, I think that's a good way to be living. And I feel like we live in a culture specifically, right? I mean, we have storage units
Up
all over the place. You know what I mean?
Look, I'm super mad. There's a new storage unit place on my way to church. It was a beautiful field with rolling hills, and I'm so ticked about it. And then I'm just like, these people are making way more money than me. Maybe I need to be in the storage unit business. Except that is anti the house peace gospel.
Yeah.
Don't do a storage unit.
Yeah. No, I think I totally. I mean, but we accumulate stuff, and we accumulate cheap stuff, and we accumulate disposable goods, you know.
We really do, and we assign very deep meaning to them, partly because of we know how much they cost and we remember that. So I am chronically offended because when I try to sell something on Facebook Marketplace, nobody wants my stuff, and I'm like, my stuff is good. What is wrong? But you know what? My stuff isn't any better than anybody else's. It's just I bought it. I paid those dollars. And that is a problem. It's a sunk cost fallacy situation where you know that you pay money for it. So instead of getting rid of it and maybe recouping a little bit of money, but for sure recouping the space, we're just going to hold on to it till it molds and rots. And then we got to throw it away anyway.
Well, I mean, it reminds me, Jesus talks about this very thing, right? Like not storing up treasures for yourself where the moth eats away and the rust, you know, rots. And I mean, like, this isn't new concepts,
no,
I guess.
No, there's nothing new for this. So this winter, my husband and I bought a small piece of property nearby to kind of develop into a weekend place or a little camp or somewhere where kids can run around in the woods. And it's a diamond. It was a diamond in the rough. Okay. It was the site of a hoard, and the structure that was the home, it was a mobile home, was removed. We never saw that, but basically imagine, everything that would be around a country, mobile home property of hoarders, that all that outside stuff was there.
Gotcha.
So little outbuildings, dog pens,
tires.
Oh my gosh. And we still have the tires. I'll get to that. But like so many tires, so many railroad ties, so many pieces of fencing. There is like a little pseudo house that someone had been living in, but it's very rough, very, very rough. Anyway, so we bought it knowing we'd have to clean that up. And just the process of cleaning, we filled three dumpsters. It was 6 tons of trash that we got rid of. And we burned a lot. We burned all the wood. So that doesn't even count the wood. But while I was picking all this stuff up and we did all the cleanup during the pandemic, especially at the beginning. So it was cold and damp, but all this stuff was exposed to the weather. And so often I was like, this thing could have been given to the, you know, Goodwill. This could have been used. This could have been recycled. Not to blame, like, the hoarding is a mental illness, and I have tons of compassion for that. So hear me when I say that. But when we hoard, and everybody has a hoard, I promise you that. Everybody has something they're holding on to irrationally. But what we're doing is we're holding on to it because it means so much, or we spent the money. But when in fact it still could be used, someone else could get more use out of it. And that feels like such a waste. I hate waste. I hate waste so much. Mm. Not to say that I don't have waste in my life, you know, but at any rate, just the entire time I'm like, oh my gosh, here's like historical pictures of Birmingham schools in the 50s. Like this could have been in a library. Instead it's moldy and I'm throwing it away. Or, you know, this box of clothing is now, I mean, everything was sopping wet. So that's an acute situation that most of us don't have. But in some ways, you know, we open up drawers and it's all the like just in case items that maybe we could get rid of and be okay without, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That always comes back to bite me because I'm very much like that. My wife tends to like want to hold on to things just a little bit more, right? but inevitably, Anytime I get her to actually get rid of something,
she needs
like
it.
3 weeks later. Yes, it drives me crazy.
Oh man. Well, see, the problem is, we'll go psychology on that. The problem is, it's kind of like gambling or social media where you get intermittent rewards. Okay. So the intermittent reward is sometimes you need that thing and you're like, yes, I had the screw I needed. Score. And so you keep doing it when you might have 100 times that you don't need it, but then you get the reward of having the thing when you need it. But there's these writers called the minimalists. And I talk about this all the time. So probably a repeat of 1 million interviews, but I mean, I've had a million interviews just in case.
I knew.
Yeah. they're just in case little rubric is 20 minutes, or it's called the 20-20 rule. If you can replace something in 20 minutes for less than $20, it's probably a thing you can get rid of. And probably you're not ever going to rebuy it. But you could if you needed to.
Right. I think that's a helpful rule.
I think it's helped me.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So, I mean, I read your blog and I feel like there's some like really super helpful stuff on the blog on your website.
Oh, thanks.
Do you have maybe like a couple, like, I know we've given a couple as we've gone through this interview, but like a couple of like easy life hacks that, you know, maybe like most every home that you go into, like, this is something that I'm going to for sure put in play at this house.
Oh gosh. Give me a room.
Okay.
What room?
Let's say kitchen.
Okay. I mean, unfortunately, I'm going to sound like I'm just beating a dead horse here. But the thing that most kitchens suffer from is too much stuff. So 1 million sippy cups, 1 million Yeti cups, 1 million plastic cups from the Alabama Auburn game. And it's like, well, you've got 3 cabinets full of cups. Let's step back and look at that. Look at how many cabinets you have. And is this really what you want to do? But like on a practical level, okay, that aside, something I like to do that most people don't think about is move shelves around in kitchens. Because they're like, well, this doesn't fit here. But like you can, most shelves are adjustable unless you live in a much older house, like in the 50s or something. And people are like, oh my gosh, like it's a little thing, but it really can make a big difference. And so if you move a shelf up, maybe you can add a little bitty thing that's called a shelf helper. It's kind of like an extra little wire, like coated wire shelf that you can put in so that in some areas you can have a double decker situation, but then you've got room for say tall bottles next to that. Also another hack in a kitchen is in pantries, packaging takes up a lot of room and you wouldn't think so, except think about a box of granola bars. Okay. You've got the box and it's full and that's completely like that's the same size and shape of its contents, right? But then it's not full and you're using it and you might open another box and you don't know how many are in there. And now you've got all these boxes and they're flopping around. So my big thing is to get rid of packaging and put stuff in clear or possibly white bins so that you can see your inventory. Again, if you see it, you're going to know that you have it. You're not going to overbuy. You're not going to forget. Things aren't going to go bad. So that's just a simple thing that anybody can do in their pantry and get rid of packaging if possible.
Yeah, no, that's super helpful. Okay, I'll give you one more.
Okay.
What about a bedroom?
Okay.
Like your own bedroom, you know, sort of.
Not yours.
Mine specifically.
Yours is fine.
It's pristine. I literally just like the other, like 2 days ago, got rid of like a trash bag full of clothing. I took it to Goodwill, but you know, it feels very nice though. Now it's like, wow, I can see all my clothes. It's pretty awesome.
So a lot of times people think that they have a laundry problem when in fact they've got a too much clothing problem. And there's some stat out there that's like 80% of the time you only wear 20% of your clothes. So this would not really apply to someone who's a clothes horse. If you're a clothes horse, you do the thing. You go with it, get a bigger closet, like trick it out so that you can put as many shoes in there as possible. So I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about normal, average people who get dressed every day. So yes, definitely like looking and saying, do I feel good in this? Do I like this outfit? there's a stain in this, but I just try to like cover it with my arm. Like, that's terrible. Don't do that. You know, the other thing that I do personally is I feel like if I buy clothes infrequently, I can afford to buy nicer clothes that last longer, that look better, that, you know, have more versatility. So that's something that I prefer to do. You know, I mean, my clothing, hanging clothing, which is winter and summer, is probably less than, well, it's probably 3 feet wide.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, so you don't cycle even, like put up winter, like during that season and get it back out or anything?
No. And here's why, because you forget.
Yeah.
At least I do. I used to do that when I had a smaller closet. I would forget about an entire box of sweatshirts until like 5 years later. I'm like, oh yeah, there's those things. So if someone doesn't have to cycle it out, I just wouldn't. I want to be able to see what I have.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So, okay. Well, so we can go back to bedrooms if you want. So another thing that is helpful in bedrooms, like I made the mistake years ago of buying a very cool looking, two cool looking side tables. And I still use them because I have them. They were repurposed sewing machine tables where the legs are sewing machines and the tops are just like a thick wood. And that's fine because I have a generous closet. But if you don't, that doesn't make sense. You really need to have something with drawers and be able to utilize those drawers. So just little things like that in a bedroom. I personally like to like divide drawers up in a bedroom, in a dresser situation, because I call it like the clothing soup. You know, if you have a big drawer, especially if it's deep, it's just a soup of clothes and you're like, I thought I had black leggings. I know I have black leggings. Where are the black leggings? And then you're just making it worse. So I like to use, IKEA has these things, they're called scubs, SKUBBS. And not everybody likes using these, but I love them. So in one of them, I'm going to have my t-shirts folded Marie Kondo style, like filed vertically. Right. And then I'm like, there's all my shirts. And then another one, I've got my leggings. I'm like, oh yeah, I have like 5 pairs of black leggings. So don't buy any more. So not only is it going to prevent chaos in their drawer, but it's also going to help me shopping later.
Sure.
And I think that getting your home organized, even if it's one drawer at a time or one room at a time, does help you with future purchasing. Because in my brain, granted, I've had a lot more practice at this kind of stuff because of the work, but when I go to Target, I'm like, Target's got my number. They know like gold things that sit on shelves. But guess what? I don't have enough of. I don't have enough shelf space. My shelves are full, and you know, or my section of jeans in my drawer is full. So if I feel like it's the right thing to do to buy this, then something got to give, you know.
Right.
Or just keep walking. Just be like, no, I'm gonna keep going.
Yeah, that's a good policy in Target, because it will get in over your head pretty quick there.
I'm like, ooh, tassels? Okay. Never mind that I have 5 million pillows already. I don't need any more pillows.
It's that red card. It gets you every time. You're like, but I get 5% off, you know. Gosh. Because the same thing holds true for the kitchen too, right? How many times have we bought peanut butter and like there was a peanut butter sort of like shoved in behind a bunch of other stuff?
Yes.
You know, it's like,
yes.
God.
There it is. Yep.
Yeah.
100%.
Right. That makes sense. Okay. So give me the rundown on like, say somebody's listening, wants help. Give me the rundown on like ways to find you, contact you, you know, sessions, all that jazz.
So the best way to reach me is from my website, which is housepeace.net. housepeace.net. And I've got, there's an email list that I don't send a ton of emails out, maybe a few a year, but like I would put a special on there or something. But, if someone was interested in a job, they can look and see at all kinds of after pictures of real life, jobs that we've done. They can look at what services we offer and then just click get started, and that sends an email directly to me, and it's got questions on there like, you know, the obvious, like where do you live, but also like, hey, how much do you want to be involved in this job? Because some people say go, and other people are like, no, I really want to do it with you. I want to understand. I want to, you know, let you know how I work so that you're not going to do something I hate or, you know, whatever.
Right, right.
So that's the best way to reach us right now. I have a lot of stuff on Instagram as well. It's at house.peace. Lots of saved Instagram stories and just pictures of more before and afters. The website has mostly afters, but there's some stuff on Instagram as well. We're on Facebook, but I'm just not super active there.
Yeah, I'm the same way, so I get it.
And we do offer virtual services. So we're Birmingham-based. We have an Atlanta presence as well, but we do online sessions that take a little under an hour and just like a to-do list for that person. Those are really fun for people who are like motivated but don't know where to start.
Sure. No, that's super helpful and, you know, a great resource to know about for sure. So I'll make sure and get that all in the show notes so people can find you easily and all that stuff for sure. Well, are you ready to jump into the final two questions?
I am ready.
Okay. Awesome. So my first question is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
So I thought about this. I don't know how strange my jobs are, but just who I am, it might be strange. I was a bank teller for a season.
Okay.
This is when we lived in Kentucky, and it was probably only strange because I was in my young 20s and I got talked to about my nail polish and my hairstyles and my demeanor and things like that by the bank manager. That was not a fun thing, but I did enjoy being a teller. I liked counting all the money and making everything balance at the end of the day. So wasn't a super great fit for me, but it was fun for a season.
Yeah, that's cool. I love that. Okay, so my final question then is, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring God's kingdom more into their work?
I'll give you advice that was given to my husband years ago because he was in a very small youth group of a church in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania that for some reason turned out a lot of kids who were interested in ministry. So when he was in it, I think there were six kids. I don't know if it was graduating or if they were all in high school at the same time, but all but him went into the ministry, like ordained or whatever. And he was like, but I like rocks. I like geology. And he was told, like, guess what? The geology world needs believers. And you will make an impact in your life just by being a person who loves the Lord and putting one foot in front of the other. And that has always stuck with me, just saying like, I can care for people and love people. I still don't know that I know how to be a business that is owned by a Christian. Like I'm not going to do an advertising push, like, hey, we've got a Jesus fish or something, you know, like, but I am a believer. Yeah. All the girls that work for me, we're all believers. And we do have this like trust, that we can love a person where they are and we have no judgment on that. And if they are that much more open to the gospel, then that's great. You know? So I think just being a person who loves the Lord and doing, what we can to do the right thing, to love them, to be honest, to be confidential, all those things matter very much.
Yeah, that's great. Tara, it's been so nice to hang out and chat a little bit. This is super fun.
Yeah, it's a joy. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Well, I hope you enjoyed this interview with Tara. I really encourage you to go check out House Peace. And I think it's something that can bring a lot of value to a lot of people's lives. I know I'm excited about setting up my session. There's things I would like an outsider's perspective on in places on my house. So, yeah, I encourage you to go check her out. I hope you enjoyed some of those tips. I'd love to know if you sort of implemented any of these tips or were convicted, like you have too many coffee mugs or something. I'd love to hear about those things. So drop me a line. Let me know. Also, this is a great time to go to the bottom of your app. Leave a rating and review there just to let people know that you're listening to the podcast and you enjoy it. What you enjoy about it, I greatly appreciate that. And until next time, get out there and hustle.